This is episode 146 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, Transfer Safety for Nursing Home Residents. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And Will must be a little forlorn today. But anyway, we are your hosts for this episode. Excited hosts. Before we dive into the meat of the episode, I just want to give a shout out that if I'm looking at the, because we record these so far in advance sometimes, but if I'm looking at the calendar correctly, this is National Volunteer Appreciation Week. And why that is important is because generally we celebrate the National Long-Term Care Ombudsman Programs during National Volunteer Appreciation Week. So this is a week where you give your long-term care ombudsman a hug and say, we appreciate you.
Yeah.
Buy them a cup of coffee.
The vast majority of them are volunteers. Volunteers, in case you're confused.
That's right.
Some of them are paid and they have paid positions.
Some of them are not.
But the program is made up largely by people who volunteer, and even those that they get paid, it's essentially still volunteer.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give a shout out to those to those folks, but the real crux of this program is dealing with safety during transfers for nursing home residents, and we're not doing that alone. We have third time guest appearance for this person. It's Teresa Boynton.
Yeah.
We first saw her in episode 86, caring for nursing home residents at risk of falling. That was in, way back in September of 2018. Then had her again back episode 94 in November of 2018, talking about slings and lifts. Are they safe?
Yeah.
So for those that don't know Teresa or haven't watched those episodes or listened to those episodes, can you tell us, Will, a little bit about Teresa?
Sure. One of the reasons we like having Teresa on is that you hear us talking about these different assessment tools that nursing homes and the healthcare staff have to use. And she's one of those people that develops those tools. That's what level of expertise that she has. She's currently an independent consultant. She assists healthcare facilities with implementing and sustaining safe handling, mobility, and fall prevention programs. And the reason that she's able to do that is she previously worked for Hillrom as clinical consultant and for Banner Health for almost 30 years. And during that time, she developed and validated and proved that it was useful and true, the bedside mobility assessment tool for nurses, which is also called the BMAT. She is certified by the Association of Safe Patient Handling Professionals. She's presented at numerous conferences, including a couple of years ago, the National Fall Prevention Conference and the Greenhouse Long-Term Care Conference on Meaningful Life and Mobility Safe Lifting Practices. This is her third time on the podcast, so we are very honored to have her.
Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Great. So, Teresa, we love having you on. Again, like I said, this is at the top of the show before you were on. This is your third appearance, and we've had you talk about everything from caring for residents that are at risk of falling to exactly what slings and lifts are in other episodes. This one, we're just talking about safety in resident transfers, and just so that we're not confused, we're not talking about transferring from one facility to another facility, but literally transferring. And I'll let you give the definition of that. So from a 40,000 foot view, what does transfer mean in a nursing home setting?
Sure, happy to do that. So it's basically being able to move the resident from one surface to another. For instance, from bed to recliner, recliner to wheelchair, wheelchair to toilet. So those would all be types of transfers. And then we also look at, can they be done independently? Do they need some assistance, partial assistance, or is it going to be a resident who needs total assistance in moving from one surface to another?
Gotcha. Are there any times, Teresa, when maybe a fall is, or not a fall or an accident is more common than another, like, for example, like bed to wheelchair, wheelchair to standing, or, you know, seated to standing? Where do you see, in your experience, falls and injuries most likely occurring?
Well, one of the things we know from the Center for Disease Control that an elder adult falls every second of every day. So we know it's extremely common. And then we just have to think about typically, again, many falls in, for instance, a hospital setting are unwitnessed. And I don't know if that's been studied quite as much in the residential or care assist settings, but whenever a resident is moving a greater distance, so having to move from the bed and not just doing a pivot transfer or a seated pivot transfer onto their wheelchair, but they're having to move from the bed and for a distance to get to, for instance, their recliner, or going from the bed to the toilet, they're moving a longer distance. So if there is any tendency towards, for instance, postural hypotension, orthostatic hypotension, they're at increased risk of a fall. I also think there's an increased risk of a fall when the care staff and the resident is not aware that they may now currently be weaker or that their condition has changed somewhat. So we know that a lot of falls happen around toileting, that if there's any urinary incontinence or frequency issues and the resident is anxious to get to the toilet, then that also becomes an increased risk. We also know with advanced age, so the oldest of the old, 85 years old and above, are at increased risk of falling.
And Teresa, it's a phrase that people may not be familiar with, even though we're all familiar with the phenomenon personally. Can you explain what orthostatic hypotension is?
It's a decrease basically systolic blood pressure. So, and it typically happens within the first minute to 3 minutes of standing. Mm-hmm. So the blood pressure drops, making patients or residents lightheaded, feeling weak. And so it's a drop in typically systolic blood pressure.
Gotcha. When you stand up and you feel dizzy, lightheaded, and you want to fall.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
So, Teresa, what are some of the considerations that a nursing home CNA or nurse would give when assisting a resident from, say, a bed to a wheelchair? Like, what are you looking out for? Where are you putting your hands? Like, that kind of thing.
Well, so you're looking out for, again, has there been any change in the resident status? Increased weakness? Is their strength about the same? Are they able to pump their ankles, move their knees? Are they able to rise smoothly, or do you have to haul them up? And if they're requiring more than minimal standby contact guard assistance, then that really is when the care staff should be looking at, is a mechanical lift much more appropriate piece of equipment or way of helping to transfer that resident?
I see. When you say a lift, what is a lift?
So there are a variety of lifts, and they're usually divided into categories, typically called a total lift, and that means that the resident doesn't need to participate at all, that they are dependent, and so the lift is going to do all of the work. Typically, they would be in a sling that fully supports them, and they're lifted off of one surface, for instance, the bed, and then the lift is moved, and they're lowered into a chair, for instance. So that would be a total lift. There are also sit-to-stand lifts or mechanical lifts that, again, you use a sling, or sometimes it's called a vest, something that goes around the resident. And in this case, instead of just lifting them up completely, we're raising them. They are having to weight bear through their legs, or their legs are heavy to support them. Although, again, depending on the type of sit-to-stand lift, they don't have to participate a great deal, but this would be the patient that there isn't any reason why we cannot get them upright or even partially upright, weight bearing through their legs. So that would be a sit to stand lift. And there are also stand aids. Typically, these are non-powered, so they don't have a battery, they don't have a power source. The resident has to be able to participate, and typically they can pull themselves up. And then usually there's some type of paddle that goes behind them that either supports them or keeps them from falling, kind of wedges them in place. And that can be used to transfer. And each one of those, so for the non-powered stand aid, again, the resident would be able and willing to participate and pull themselves up. They wouldn't be pushed into it. They have to participate and pull up. In a sit-to-stand lift, they don't have to pull themselves up, but they, you know, that the caregiver knows that they're going to be weight-bearing through their legs. And but the lift, the sit-to-stand lift actually helps to get them into an upright position and then can be rolled so they can be transferred. And then again, the first one that I mentioned, the total lift, it can be mobile, meaning it's on the floor. It moves on the floor, or it could be ceiling mounted or overhead mounted. And again, you put a full body sling under them or a seated sling under them. It lifts them up and they are just moved. They don't have to participate at all over to whatever surface they're being moved to, a recliner, a toilet, a shower, bench. So those are kind of the three main types of lifts.
Right. And what, going down the line then, what I've heard the term a sling, and this a sling is a part of the lift, but can you have a sling apart from a lift?
Typically, the sling is going to be used with a lift. And the lift by itself, the mechanics, the motor goes up and down. But without a sling, it's not, it's useless. It's not going to get you what you need to use. If you really are avoiding a manual transfer, in other words, using brute force to move a resident, you are going to need a sling. So a sling, again, is going to be attached to, going to be applied, fitted onto the resident, and then it's going to be attached to or applied onto a mechanical lift. Again, whether that's a total lift, a sit-to-stand, or again, typically in the case of a stand aid, there is not, a sling is not applied usually.
What about a transfer board? What is that?
Transfer boards are, they're sometimes called slide boards, but they're a way of, again, it's a low-tech or low, there's no mechanism. There are seated transfer boards or slide boards where the resident would be expected to participate. And so, for instance, you might have a slide board. They come in different lengths. It's typically a smooth wooden board that the resident would help to move themselves along from bed, staying seated on it from bed to, for instance, wheelchair. So it's a way of doing a assisted a transfer, but the resident would participate. The other way that transfer boards, or sometimes they're called lateral transfer boards, and that would be used in the case, again, it's a type of board that reduces friction, that allows you to do a supine or a laying down transfer from, for instance, bed to a stretcher, from one horizontal surface to another. But in a nursing home setting, a long-term care facility, typically a slide board or a transfer board would be for a seated transfer from, for instance, a bed to a wheelchair, or from the wheelchair to the toilet. So the resident slides their bottom along it to get from one surface to the other.
Yeah, and if you can imagine, Rob, it's because my mom uses one. She parks the wheelchair next to her bed, and then it's mm-hmm. a long flat board that's got beveled ends at 45 degree
exactly.
angles, and she it bridges the gap between the bed and the wheelchair, so she can start on the wheelchair, go over that bridge into the bed. They're really effective devices.
That's right.
Very simple, but extremely effective.
They are. Exactly. So we're allowing that resident, that elder person, or again, other folks use them for other reasons, but allowing them to be independent and to do those transfers. They need to be the right length. We do need to be aware of any friction on them. We typically do not want bare skin on a slide board or a transfer board. So there are different ways of kind of handling that. But again, they need to be well fitted, and they have those, like you mentioned, those beveled edges. So you can easily move from one surface to another. And again, they're great for an active transfer by the resident from, for instance, bed to wheelchair.
You had mentioned earlier that a great many of the injuries in nursing homes that result from improper transfers occur during toileting. What are the factors that contribute to that? Like, why is that more dangerous than going from bed to wheelchair or bed to chair or bed to standing?
Well, and I don't know what the research has really definitively shown about that, but I do know that a lot of the falls around toileting are because you're working in an awkward space. A lot of bathrooms, including in long-term care nursing facilities, are not set up to allow the caregiver to easily help with the transfer. So, you know, that's always a factor. That how much space do you have around the toilet? How do you get through the door to the toilet? And then usually, again, it's that sense of urgency that I've got to go, I've got to go now. So I think people are moving maybe a little faster than they should be, because again, it's like we want to get you on the toilet so that you don't have an accident.
Right.
But it's kind of the environment, that sense of urgency. And then I think sometimes it really is a lack of planning, really thinking about, okay, this is what we can anticipate, that we are going to have these frequency issues or urgency issues, and we are dealing with an environment, an amount of space that sometimes isn't optimal. So how do we plan ahead for that? And sometimes it's doing that purposeful rounding or toileting rounds where we get to the resident, hopefully before they really have to go, and say, I'm going to take you to the bathroom now. And so it's done in a much more controlled way. But I think those are at least what the studies show lead to some of the issues around the toilet. Mm. A resident may not want to bother a caregiver. And so if the caregiver asks them, do you have to go? It's like, oh, no, you're busy. And then, again, pretty soon we have that sense of urgency. And we get a resident who maybe if they would have gone earlier, we wouldn't have had the fall. We wouldn't have had some of the other issues. So toileting is something that all care facilities really have to consider how they're handling that.
I think it's so important that you mentioned planning, like thinking ahead. You know, if the individual, you know, normally goes to the bathroom at 11 p.m., it maybe is important that somebody be there to do that rather than that resident, you know, try to for themselves. But speaking of the planning and understanding how to make a plan, generally, who is the individual in the nursing home that is assisting with the transfer, and generally what type of training do they get in the act of transferring the nursing home resident?
Well, that's a good question. And I know it varies throughout facilities. I think some actually get adequate training. So it's typically going to be your certified nursing aide, your assistant who is actually doing the transfers. And I think they need to be well trained on if they identify, they feel that their resident is weaker than they were in the morning. What do they get to do? So can they default to a safer way of moving that resident, where maybe in the morning the resident was able to get up and walk with standby contact guard assist, but now in the afternoon the aide has identified that they're looking weaker, they're stating they don't feel quite as good, and so then is the aide empowered to say, you know what, I'm going to go get that stand aid or that sit-to-stand lift? So who is actually assessing that resident on real time, using some type of objective findings to identify what is the safest way to do that transfer? At some facilities, I think they've actually worked out those processes and procedures, and they do well, that an aide can always default to a safer way of transferring versus a more independent or more at risk for a fall. If I'm getting the patient up or the resident up and just allowing them to walk, or is the aide instructed to let the person in charge of that resident, the nurse know. So it's having, again, those processes and procedures in place, because it is the aides, the nursing assistants, who are the folks that are sustaining the greatest injuries associated with handling, mobilizing, transferring those residents.
Mm-hmm. So what type of we know that you were highly involved and developed and validated the BMAT. Is the BMAT something that's used to assess a patient's transferability, or is that different?
No, it absolutely is. So the BMAT, it stands for the Bedside Mobility Assessment Tool, and it was validated in the hospital setting on ICU and med-surg units. But it is being, it does have application with residents in different care, long-term care, assisted living type of facilities. And it's basically just a way of looking at real-time objective findings. Can the resident go through a series of quick physical assessment to, and it's basically a way, when I look at it, of having a resident be aware of, are they aware of any change in their status, and then also allowing that aide or that nurse to look at the resident and see, is there a change? Mm-hmm. So it's basically just seeing, can they move to sitting at the edge of the bed, and do they need any assistance doing that? Right. So, or if they're in a chair, can they sit up independently and maintain their seated balance? So that's just the first step of it. And then if they can do that, can they pump their ankle or move their ankle, straighten out their knee? They don't have to lift it up high, but can they pump their ankle? One of the other things, again, that ankle pumping is doing, when we talk about orthostatic hypotension or postural hypotension, ankle pumping is one of the ways that can really help with venous return. And that's one of the things that can be done to potentially help prevent an orthostatic hypotensive event. So that's the second step of the BMAT. Can you pump your ankle? Again, we're getting some better venous return. We're seeing if that ankle can actually move, or is it dropping a little bit? If we have an ankle drop for a variety of reasons, it's really hard to walk or even stand safely if you cannot move that ankle, if you have a foot drop, the beginning of a foot drop contracture or an actual foot drop contracture, which is in hospitals quite common after even short terms of bed rest. The second piece is then, can you stand? And again, typically we want the resident to stand for up to a minute. Research shows us that within a minute, up to 3 minutes is when the majority of people will start to feel faint, lightheaded. You can have them sit back down. So we're giving them some time for the fluid shift to happen, for venous return to happen, to see if things are going to kind of stabilize, or the baroreceptor is going to kick in and, again, prevent us from fainting. So it's just a more cautious approach. And then the last piece is, can you step in place, march in place, and then forward step and return, forward step and return. I want you to be able to do that. If you cannot do that, then I should not have you try and walk independently away from your chair or away from the bed. Right. You've increased the risk of a fall. If you can't go through that simple series, and for instance, I want to take you from bed to toilet, then I know I need to go get a lift to help me do this, because I don't want you potentially falling, and I don't want to have to support you. So it's just a quick little assessment. But again, in doing the assessment, you're also helping with some of those activities that are connected with looking for and potentially preventing orthostatic hypotensive events.
Right. And just for the family members that may be listening to this episode, when you're talking about venous return, can you explain how you're talking about blood flow and blood pressure?
Sure.
And why that's important?
Sure. So typically what happens if we're lying flat, our fluids tend to shift down into our thorax, so into our chest, our trunk area, if we're lying flat. And as we move, those fluids need to shift. On the other hand, we also need to make sure that we're getting the venous blood returning up to our heart so it can be pumped throughout our body. And the biggest skeletal muscle pump that helps with that venous return, returning the blood up to our chest, up to our head, is our calf muscles. So by pumping your ankle, you're contracting those calf muscles, and that's helping with venous return. So we want all of our fluid shifting properly. So again, that we get blood to our head and we don't get lightheaded, to our brain and we don't get lightheaded.
Interesting. Teresa, can you tell us what the Association of Safe Patient Handling Professionals is?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to tell you about that. So it's a group of professionals who really are experts and wanting to, through the association, provide education, certification for members. So it's a great association that is really promoting safe patient handling, safe resident handling, and mobility. So really looking at how do we provide resources to people, and then if you've been working in the field for a period of time, you want to become an associate, certified as an associate, we have that membership level. You can also become a clinical, certified as a clinical person or as a professional, the P. So we have three different levels. The association has a lot of great resources on their website, a lot of webinars, training for members. They're very much involved in the annual National Safe Patient Handling and Mobility Conference, which again not only focuses on acute care setting but also on long-term care settings, assisted living, and outpatient ambulatory care. Really looking at all of the different settings and trying to provide the best resources to people in general, but again, to professionals who want to pursue certification.
Wow, fantastic. I'm glad that we got a plug in there for them. This is a great organization.
Yes, I'm glad I was able to do that too. Thank you.
And we'll put the website up there too. They're a great website for resources for people that want to find out more about this.
Correct.
Well, Teresa, we really appreciate you coming on the show this week. As always, you are a great resource, and I think that our audience truly appreciates it.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to do it.
Great. All right. Thank you, Teresa, so much. Well, it's always a pleasure having somebody. Like I said in the very beginning, she's one of those professionals that is so involved in this area that she has created one of the assessment tools. And assessment tools are extremely important in long-term care settings, whether it's assessing for the likelihood of skin breakdown, the likelihood of falls.
It's like having Samuel Morris on the Morris Code podcast.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so she's extremely knowledgeable, always helpful, and that's a good thing to have on here.
So that's going to complete this particular episode of the Nursing Ombuds podcast. And again, be sure to go up to your nearest long-term care ombudsman.
Or any volunteer of any kind, including fire persons.
Fire persons. And give them a big hug. And especially if it's a fire person, say, Will Smith told me to give you a hug.
Yeah.
Because it's National Volunteer Appreciation Week, as we all know.
Yeah, because there are many volunteer fire persons.
Correct.
Most fire persons are volunteer, I think.
Is that true?
I think in a lot of small counties.
Yeah. Like I know that the one down the street in North Highland is their volunteer.
Yeah, they're all volunteer fire people.
Fire people. So you can consume each and every episode as they come out, which is every other week, bi-monthly, at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Or on our YouTube channel, or you can check us out wherever you get your podcasts from, be it Spotify, Stitcher, Pod Puppies, wherever it is.
Not iTunes.
Not iTunes.
They're gone.
Not iTunes since a year ago. Mm-hmm. So with that, we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube
and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.